Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer. There's Ryan Finley, Sports Editor, Union Tribune. Ryan, we're doing this a day late because anything we had said yesterday, which would have been Tuesday morning, would have been moot. We knew that. And then, yes, a flurry of deals, mostly concentrated on the bullpen, but also a starting pitcher. Padres last night opened a two-game series against the Dodgers, which they'll complete tonight. Hopefully you guys can listen to this before then, but doesn't matter because we're talking trades and future of the Padres. Ryan, where do you want to start?
I'd like to start with actually last night, very, very briefly. We were talking off camera right before this thing started. I thought last night was, to me, maybe the game of the year. If not the game of the year, then 1B. If we're talking game of the year, to do what the Padres did in front of a Petco Park record crowd against the Dodgers, two home runs in the ninth, the pitchers shut down top of the 10th, and then a little bit of chess in the bottom of the 10th. And Kevin, they can read your work in your Padres Daily and Jeff Sanders' game story from last night to get all the details. I want to ask you about the chess move in the bottom of the 10th. Let's set the scene here, okay? Go ahead.
Okay. Well, it's tied 10-10 tied 5-5 after the Padres scored two runs on solo homers by Manny Machado and Jackson Merrill in the ninth inning. I'm sure you guys already know that. Padres get a runner on second after Robert Suarez closes with a perfect 10th against the Dodgers, leaves their runner stranded at second. Ha-Sung Kim starts the game or the inning at second. We got Hi Kyle Higashioka walks. Then yep. Luis Arraez, who, by the way, has hit the three double plays in the last four games, lays down a sacrifice bunt to move the runners to second and third. Jurickson Profar comes up, and he has intentionally walked because, you know, he's a killer. And that brings up Jake Cronenworth. And I'm thinking to myself, this can't happen, right? But because Jake Cronenworth is one for his last 14 or 15 against lefties, Donovan Solano's waiting somewhere, as far as I knew, and Jake's walking to the plate. And suddenly, here comes Donovan Solano. And that makes a lot of sense, right, Ryan? A lot, right?
A lot, absolutely. This is a guy who, you know, I would argue if you need a single from somebody on this team, probably Arraez is one, maybe Solano is two.
And I could argue on you. Who's going to give you the better at bat?
Yeah,
might be Solano. It's going to be Solano. And so, yes, it's the whatever, duh. Hey, maybe you should have done that before. Hey, whatever. This is not how it works. Like, I mean, this is the right move, and it would have been the wrong move to have Jake Cronenworth, and Mike Schilt would have been asked about it. But, like, it still was significant. Do you realize that Jake Cronenworth has had some huge moments for the Padres, has had some huge moments against left-handed pitcher Alex Vesia, who's on the mound for the Dodgers, has never this year been pinch hit for, has only been pinch hit for once since the start of the 2021 season in a game that wasn't a blowout. Like, this is a regular who does hit lefties fairly well, except for most of this year. And that manager, Mike Schilt, made a move that he should have made, and it paid off.
Yeah, it did. I was watching the game at home with my laptop open, but a couple of kids, big Padre followers, and we were going through sort of, okay, so here's what's going to happen. I was surprised to see Arraez bunt. Again, if there's somebody in baseball who I think could probably deliver a single and win you a game, it's him. When he bunted, though, I could sort of start to see what was happening here, which was, okay, you know they're going to walk Profar. And again, what a sentence. You know that they're going to walk Jurickson Profar intentionally because you can't face him in a situation like that. What a sentence we're saying here in 2024. And then, yeah, to pinch hit for Cronenworth, for a guy with Solano, who, again, I think is a double play threat. I mean, he's 36 years old. He's not a fast runner. But, you know, if you want bat-to-ball contact, he's your guy.
Yeah, I feel like absolutely that he could but end that inning right there. But I'm with you, and I probably put him at the top of the list. I just do look at it every time. Look at what he's done since the 12th of July when Xander Bogaerts returned, and he has appeared in five games. He started three games. He has a hit in all of them. As a matter of fact, I think he has a hit in seven or eight straight games. But just going back to when he became the odd man out, Donovan Solano is 7-for-14.
Wow.
And just a guy who's bummed, right, and has acknowledged it's hard, but has kept himself ready and been a team guy. And This isn't Little League. This isn't high school. There isn't a trophy for, you know, participation and good spirit award. Like, this is the majors, and he was starting. And guess what? He'd actually played a fair amount the previous two seasons. And I just think it's admirable. It's a good story what Donovan Solano's doing.
Yep. Without belaboring this point, Kevin, was, you know, Dave Roberts comes out. Mark Pryor goes out and visits with Alex Vezia. Was it right before Solano was announced, or as Solano?
Right, and that's something that almost every pitching coach does now. And a pitch hitter comes up, which is like hilarious to me. Right. And then, but it's definitely something Mark Pryor does.
Yes. Mark Pryor goes out, San Diego guy, uni guy, go Dons. Mark Pryor comes out, talks to the guy, comes back. Then Dave Roberts comes out, right? We're watching TV going, what's going on here? I saw some of the explanation after. Was he trying to get Vezia?
That I honestly tried to look for what the LA media had. I didn't have a chance. Usually Jeff and I will split up on something like that. Last night we had to say, hey, that whereas like one of us will go to the Dodger clubhouse, usually Jeff. But Jeff was writing the Gamer and I had a newsletter to do. There was just too much to do. I'm bummed that I didn't get what Dave's explanation was for what was clearly a mistake by one of them.
Yeah, because if this is the chess game, right? Okay, so the Padres then go lift their lefty, put in a righty, because Vezia's left-handed. The chess play there would be to lift Vezia and bring in a righty.
Right, you can't do the two and one at bat. The two visits, I don't know what the Dodgers were doing right there. That's like, I know Dave gets criticized a lot, but like he's not a dummy.
No.
I don't know what happened there. I wish I did. Yeah. Too much going on last night. Any other game would have been like, oh my gosh, that might be the story of the game. It wasn't even the 15th story last night, but like it's still interesting, and I wish that I knew. Just too much going on.
Sure. Arguably, the Padres' win of the year probably wasn't even the biggest story of the day. The big story yesterday was the Major League Baseball trade deadline. Padres took an interesting tack here. We've been talking for 2 weeks that, you know, that they better go get some starting pitching, maybe a little bit of help in right field, you know, and some bullpen arms. They addressed basically one of those needs, but they addressed it in a big time way. Let's talk about Tanner Scott, Marlins closer, all-star. Padres got him and Brian Hoeing in exchange for a package of minor leaguers that, again, depending on what happens this season, could be seen as pretty significant.
Yes. I am far more prone to pay attention to what you get, but we always are going to in the future talk about what you lost. I think it's, you know, possible that Graham Pauly and Adam Mazur turn in to find major leaguers. But they've been in the major leagues. So you got to see some things. Right. And then Robbie Snelling, the top pitching prospect, because other guys have, you know, left. And I say that because like the Padres don't value their guys the same way MLB.com or Baseball America or, you know, whoever, ESPN or The Athletic. Those are rankings that give us an idea of, hey, here's a guy that the industry thinks well of. But one team's number two could actually be that team's number seven.
Right.
So good players, but like the Padres had needs and they don't believe. It's like when they give up Cal Quantrill. That's a good pitcher. We maybe could have used that guy for five more years, but we're going to get Mike Clevinger, who can help us win the World Series this year. That was the thinking at the time. And then it works out or it doesn't. Mike Clevinger gets hurt or he doesn't. Mike, you know, whatever. But like their thought is, we need to get this guy to make us better in the regular season and for our World Series run. And that's what yesterday was about. To me, the most succinct way to put it is they got the reliever or they got the starter, who's a middling starter. Look, hasn't even been as good as Rich Hill was for the Pirates last year, Martin Perez this year for the Pirates. But they got a guy who had eaten innings to get them through September. Then they made moves Sunday and yesterday for relievers to get them through October. That's what that was about.
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, the Padres have been on such a hot streak. You know, again, they were one win away from having the highest winning percentage of any long road trip they've ever had. Played really well against the Orioles and the Guardians, two playoff caliber teams. What yesterday's moves led me to believe that the Padres now think that not only are they going to make the playoffs, but they can make a deep run in the playoffs. and they're addressing their playoff roster as opposed to building a roster that they think can make the tournament. Does that make
sense? And And obviously you and I are both, like, I simplified it too much in my explanation about getting to September through October. We're simplifying it too much, but absolutely. Like, of course, Tanner Scott, Jason Adam, by the way, two guys with two first names. I'm going to screw this up so much because I have in my mind that Adam Scott pitches for this team.
Right.
Like it's one of my, like, where I trip up more than any two guys with two first names. So anyway, Jason Adam, one of the better setup men in the game, and Tanner Scott, who has developed into a really good closer pitching for a team that doesn't need a closer in the Miami Marlins. And so you have that. Robert Suarez moves Adrian Mora home, maybe gives you a seventh inning, maybe sixth, maybe comes in with runners on in the sixth versus the eighth, and then gives you into the seventh, and then you can go to Jason Adam, moves Jeremiah Estrada the sixth. Now, that's just if everybody's rested, right? Hey, maybe Jeremiah Estrada's still working the eighth, which ain't a bad thing because it's not Stephen Kolek or Yuki Matsui, right? Like, it's just incredible how much theoretically deeper it makes them. And of course it's going to help them win regular season games, but they do this envisioning they just got a left-handed closer to work whenever they need to in a high leverage situation in a playoff game against Freddie Freeman and Shohei Ohtani, or against Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's Kansas City Royals stuff from 2015. That's Cincinnati Reds stuff from 1990. That's, heck, what the Phillies were thinking when they went out and made some moves this time, this trade deadline, when they're already the best team in baseball. Like, you win in the postseason being able to, obviously, you have to have the talent, and they believe they do offensively. But you win with pitching in the late innings. That's when you win in the postseason.
Right. And this will allow Mike Schilt to manage a little bit differently, too. If you're in a playoff series or even a key regular season series and you've got lefties up and it's the eighth inning, you can, or if you have righties up and it's the eighth inning, you could say, hey, Robert,
it's the sixth inning and Kyle Schwarber. And yeah.
Right. Hey, go get him. And, you know, I know that it's a bad comp, but anytime I see a team acquire a lefty reliever in this kind of role when they already have a closer, I think so much of, the Cleveland Indians guy.
Lefty. Manuel Clase?
No.
Oh, yes, Miller.
Yeah, Andrew Miller. Oh, no. Yes. I think so much of Andrew Miller, guy who was used sort of in that fireman role for years, right? Wasn't really a closer, but was a guy who came in and faced your toughest lefties whenever you needed him to. And there aren't a whole lot of guys like that in baseball, Kevin.
Right. You know what? If you're Tanner Scott, I hear he's a really good guy and a good clubhouse guy. And, you know, but hey, wait a minute. I'm supposed to be making big money next year. Well, you know how you make big money next year as someone's closer? Come in and get Schwarber and Harper in the sixth inning or the seventh inning in the NLCS.
Right.
That's that's the same as five extra saves in the regular season.
Right. He doesn't have usage rules, does he, Kevin?
Not that anyone knows of, no.
Good. One of the things that A.J. Preller said yesterday...
He actually has gone more than one inning, so that's the evidence that he does it.
He does not. Preller, in his news conference yesterday, talked a little bit about Brian Hoeing. I'm pronouncing Hoeing correct, right?
Yes.
Brian Hoeing, that he said that they wouldn't have done the deal if Hoeing wasn't in it or something like that. Is that just something you say in a news conference, or is there something about this guy that they really like?
There are a couple things they really like. He can go multiple innings. He has been used as a starter. Now, mostly that was last year, four or five innings. Is your kind of swing guy this year? That's not how the Marlins, and I don't know the specifics whether they just didn't need him. Because remember, at the beginning of the year, they had some pretty decent pitching, actually, or whatever. But he's gone three innings quite a bit, and he's under control through 2028. He's 26 years old, and he's, so that's very enticing to them. Would the deal have got done without him? Probably not as it looked. I don't know the specifics yet, but I believe AJ's telling enough of the truth. That's how those deals are. Like, oh, you want these prospects. Okay, man, we really want Tanner Scott, but here's how we want him. Can't include this guy, but we'll take Hoeing too. And then then you have Adam Mazur.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's interesting. I mean, I was looking at his pitch mix the other day. Looks like he gets a lot of swing and miss. What is it? A splitter and a slider or something like that. Both seem to be pretty good. Has a sinker that I think has been getting cuffed around a little bit this year, but somebody who, I mean, big, strong kid who is controllable.
And you put Martin Perez. There's two guys that you hear, hey, we get them with Ruben, and we're hoping that some things really play up, right? Like Martin Perez has a 5-something ERA. He's also had some really good starts recently. Right. Look, every pitching coach that's in this league has something that helps certain guys click. Ruben has done it time and again with guys, and all they need Martin Perez to get through is, you know, 7 starts for them, where he keeps them in most of them, you know, going 5 innings, goes 6 or 7, and man, they really scored.
Absolutely. And the one thing, again, we talked last week about how they needed starting pitching. I don't think Martin Perez addresses the starting pitching problem, but I think that it changes the calculus a little bit for them. Reading the tea leaves, Kevin, I think that this means that they expect Joe Musgrove back in some form sooner rather than later, whether he's pitching 3 innings or 5.
I agree with you. It doesn't solve it. I know what you're saying. I think this is exactly how they figured and what I felt. And I hope I tried to express by the end that, you know, they're still in sort of on some of these guys, but they're not going to pay the price for the top guys. They're going to end up getting a guy at the back end of their rotation. Didn't know they were going to go this big on the relievers, but it seems like no one did except the Padres themselves. But yes, about Joe Musgrove, which I think might be your biggest point, this shows, and it was apparent during the last road trip, that the thinking on Joe Musgrove solidified. I don't want to say changed, though you could almost say that. Like, it was real mellow, like, yeah, we kind of expect Joe back. Yeah, we think Joe will be back. Yeah, we'll see. These bullpens look good. Joe's going to be okay. Not like they're still not going to take it easy and not going to, like, you know, because obviously it's not going to happen like Joe hoped it happened, which is he's pitching on Sunday, you know, or next week. It's probably going to be 2 or 3 more rehab starts, but they absolutely believe Joe Musgrove will be back. And there comes a time here. I think he'll be back just in time for an 18 games and 18 days stretch.
Yeah. Yeah. Does that change any optimism? Or what they didn't do with starting pitching, does that change any optimism about whether or not Yu Darvish comes back? Or we're just waiting at this point?
We're just waiting. That's really what it seems like. When the book is written, after the World Series win or whatever, maybe some things will come out. But it really does seem like, as much as no one can handle waiting because we have to know everything now, and then we get angry when things change, but you told me it said this now. Sometimes people's personal lives just have to play out, and we probably should respect that. And I'm talking to you, Ryan. I'm talking like, it can't be an update. You Darvish, let's think about it this way. I had the thought pop into my head last night. Man, you Darvish probably wants to be a part of this. If the gravity of the situation with you Darvish was such that he made the decision to step away from a game he loves, a team he loves, and $7 million possibly, I don't think that, you know, a team going on a run or basically anything except that situation is going to change what Yu Darvish does.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I want to make clear, I'm not talking to you. I'm kind of talking to myself. I'm talking to everyone. Like, this was monumental. Check your memory banks. The last time a guy did this. This is big. So, like, it may change, and you might be back. You might be out at a park with, a disguise on right now, throwing a bullpen, for all we know, and be back in 3 weeks. Or you might not be back this year or ever because there's stuff going on. There we go.
Yeah. No, you're right. I think that had the Padres added a ton of payroll yesterday, I think then that you could have looked at it and said, well, this probably means that they don't expect him back.
Yeah. Right. Yep. I think they did. Now, this is what they did. they added enough that I'll tell you this, if Yu comes back now, they did leave room, whether it was for Yu, which it probably was, mm-hmm. or not, they left room for Yu to come back.
Right, right. It's interesting. You talk about the high price of starting pitching. You know, when I saw what they did and really started to take in sort of the totality of it, it reminded me so much of what we talked about last December and January, which was that the Padres weren't in on these big expensive starters. So what they were going to do was they were going to try to shorten the game as much as they could, right? Remember Woo Suk Go, Kevin? Remember him? But, you know, they went out and they signed, right, Matsui and Go. And they traded for Eniel De Los Santos and saved a little bit of money in doing so.
Signed Wandy Peralta.
Right, and they signed Wandy Peralta. And that it seemed like they were trying to sort of do an end run around the starting pitching problem by getting as good as a bullpen as they could get. To me, this is that on, you know, supercharged, right?
Yes.
They went out and now have, the best setup guy in the American League and arguably two of the best closers in the National League.
That's what they did. You're right. And they shortened it for the short time of the season. Yes.
Right. Right. What do we know about the guy who they got for Eniel De Los Santos? They dealt De Los Santos to the Yankees for a AAA outfielder, but you had a note in today's Padres Daily that maybe he's a piece.
Yeah. Nothing to get like really super excited about, but enough to say they think that there's a future with this guy that we just bolstered our bullpen. Eniel De Los Santos, don't need him. I don't mean to be callous or cavalier about it, but like, okay, here's an expendable piece. And here's a tiny way that we could improve, probably give this guy a shot, if not now in September, and see if he can be a pinch runner, some sort of defensive outfielder for what Mike Schilt likes to do in, you know, late in games for the postseason. Yes. And I forget, Brandon. Can't remember. Remember it was Brandon, but and I believe it starts with an L. Anyway,
Loveridge.
I'm not going to guess, but the way it was put to me is a better Bryce Johnson.
There we go. And that was going to be my next question, which is, does this mean that Bryce Johnson's time with the Padres may be limited?
I think Bryce Johnson's time with the Padres was limited. It is more limited now, perhaps. Though the return of Fernando Tatis Jr., perhaps by the end of the month, is the biggest factor there, obviously.
Of course. Because, again, we're probably not we probably don't care who the last guy off their bench is or when Fernando Tatis Jr. comes back, right?
Maybe there's not even room. Yeah, we're not really talking about it. Mike Schilt cares, AJ Preller cares, but yes, we're not talking about Bryce Johnson or Brandon, who I promise I will remember his name after.
Brandon Lockridge.
Okay. After a little more time and sleep.
Although Bryce Johnson, and it's funny, I ask you about him a lot here because to me, he was such a just interesting addition when Fernando Tatis got hurt. Bryce Johnson now has a place in Padre history. Bryce Johnson caught the final out of a Padres no-hitter. Who would have thought that we would be mentioning a no-hitter in minute 25 of our podcast here, but it was almost a week ago, Washington, D.C. It was a week ago Thursday. Kevin, take me through that game and Dylan Cease and where this ranks sort of in terms of the cool moments you've seen on the beat.
It was certainly right up there. I mean, it wasn't the hometown kid doing it, but that's, I mean, really neither here nor there. It was a special moment in its own right. It was what to me is the lasting sort of image the lasting thought or the pervading thought of the whole thing is Dylan Cease built up to it. This was not like a no-hitter out of nowhere or, oh, hey, cool, like a guy who's come close before. Like this is a guy who now has allowed two hits over 22 scoreless innings in his last three starts. He goes into tonight's start as we tape this on Wednesday on that run. It's amazing how good he has been. And all that happened in that is that he took it for 9 innings. And I don't mean that like to diminish. Like it's just he's been that good for 3 starts. It's just he was facing a worse team and he was able to be, despite the 3 walks, more economic. And you know, he got some really nice plays. I mean, once again, in Chicago, his only hit was a dribbled infield single. There was another one. I mean, you know, four times this year, he's gone seven shutout innings and one hit. Like when he has been on, I don't like to be myopic or talk about like a Padres guy is doing something that nobody else does when I don't watch every game like I watch the Padres games. Tell me another guy who's been as dominant as Dylan Cease when he's dominant. For like a half dozen games this year, he's been as good as he was on that no-hitter day.
Yes, when he's good, he's very, very good. Kevin, I put you on the spot in all of our podcasts, and I know you're tired and I'm a little under the weather, but I'm going to do it today. Anyway, how superstitious are you when it comes to things like no-hitter?
Well, not at all. I can't say I'm not superstitious. I wonder if there's anyone out here there who isn't every once in a while, you know, a little bit, right? But absolutely not. And when we're talking about the no-hitter and I think about it, first off, I told Bryce Miller in the fifth inning that he was going to throw a no-hitter. It doesn't make me a genius or anything. It's just that, like I said, he's been going like that. And when you get a catch like you had by Jackson Merrill, and there was another one earlier, and it just felt that way. And I thought that the Nationals were overmatched that day, which, hey, there's overmatched. Like I said, overmatched teams, they don't get a no-hitter. So I got lucky. Fine. But I said it out loud. I tweeted it. And I don't tweet, but like that play deserved a tweet. And predictably, I was a real jerk for doing that. I was going to jinx it. But much like I tweeted about Joe Musgrove's no-hitter, it evidently what I did not somehow alter the universe and shift the axis of the earth so that Dylan Cease did not get his no-hitter. By the way, Dylan Cease talked about and addressed the no-hitter basically from the sixth inning on with his teammates. Wow. There was no don't talk to him, no isolation, more so than in another start. So I'll stop before I say something I regret about not talking about no-hitters.
I was sitting on a hotel room bed 4 miles from the game.
That's right.
And I was like, you know, I could probably be there in 15 minutes. I have a Baseball Writers Association pass. I could walk in. And I didn't do it. And it's and it's not because necessarily I'm superstitious, but I grown up watching the Padres. And if I stopped what I was doing every time a guy took a no-hitter into the seventh inning, I would have gotten very little done growing up, right? When I saw the catch, I went, every no-hitter has one play just like that, yeah. Right? Every no-hitter, you got to get lucky on one play. And then when Bogaerts made sort of the sliding stop, was it in the eighth?
Yeah.
I mean, I was telling our bosses, hey, you know, prepare some room on A1 for this guy's going to throw a no-hitter. But, I didn't get up because, again, I think that we've all seen it fall apart. You know, Dylan Cease even, right? I mean, he gave up a hit with two outs in the ninth inning to a guy named Luis Arraez. Ruined a no-hitter for him.
Yep.
So,
yep. I think it's neat. I do, for fans, especially for players, if they're not going to move, you know, you're not going to go to the bathroom, you know, whatever it is. I think that's neat. Just don't impose your superstitions on other people.
Absolutely. And you watch enough baseball to know that, again, if you were superstitious, Kevin, you wouldn't be a very good reporter. You'd always be, doing that. So, all right. Well, hey, let's wrap it here. Padres play the Dodgers game two of their two-game series tonight at 5:40 p.m. Very briefly, it's Dylan Cease, who we just talked about, against a guy named Clayton Kershaw. Remember him? Again, a guy who has owned the Padres over the years, not so much lately, coming back from a protracted rehab. Very interesting to see how they do it. If the Padres, tell me if I'm right here, a win today and the Padres would take the season series from the Dodgers, wouldn't they?
Be their seventh win. They only play 13 times this year. So yes, it would be the first time since 2010.
Wow. Wow. See, that seems significant to me. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think that if it happens, barring another, a big, huge comeback and walk-off win, I can't imagine that it's not a prominent part of my game story that the Padres have won a season series against the Dodgers. Right. They don't get any prizes for it, but when it's the dragon from up north, and it hasn't happened in 15 years, then I think it's pretty significant.
Yep, and it gives them the tiebreaker should something funny happen at the end of the season, the Padres and Dodgers end up tied in the standings, correct?
Dodgers are vulnerable, man. They wanted to get Tanner Scott. And right away, that last night showed why. Like, Dodgers bullpen is tough, man. And when I say tough, I mean rough. Like, not tough like the Padres bullpen is now.
They're having one of those years, too. I mean, you could fill an all-star team starting rotation with Dodgers starting pitchers who are hurt, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's without a doubt. I mean, oh my gosh, yeah. Maybe it wouldn't be showing up so much. To be fair to some pretty good relievers historically that are in the Dodgers bullpen, right. They're getting worked.
Right, they're being asked to do a lot, a little bit like the Padres bullpen was in 2021. Anyway, so hey, let's leave it there. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin AC, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.